College basketball is here. Well, close enough anyway, so I think that justifies a podcast. Welcome into Scrambled Eggs, everyone, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast. Joe McCann and Phil Bush here with you as we have our post-madness podcast. Seems like a good a time as any to talk a little bit about the season. Phil, we're just going to interrupt college football season just for a little bit here and just get excited for what Marquette fans are ready for, and that's the college hoop season.
Right. We don't have a college football team to cheer for except the team in red to our west that we cheer against. Other than that, we're just going to embrace the fact that it's nearly November and Marquette basketball time.
And we're just going to go through a few thoughts on Marquette Madness, which really isn't much because it's generally about the same thing every year, but just give some thoughts about the team. What we're going to do today, we're going to go through the schedule. It seems like a good time to do that now that the entire Big East schedule is out and we have Marquette's entire 2015-16 season laid out in front of us, and maybe some general thoughts about the team at the end of the show. But Phil, Marquette Madness happened this past Friday night. Generally the same to what we've seen in past years. Just a scrimmage, look at the team. Maybe not that new of a thing to those of us who saw the games in Italy, which were really cool. But I mean, just kind of reading some of the recaps, I wasn't there personally, but seemed like a generally good night and really what anybody expected. Nothing really earth shattering came of it, but just kind of good to see that the team is back and practicing.
Yeah, it really depends on what's your perspective. I was not there either. I mean, you have the convenience excuse of not living in the state or even in the region that you couldn't go. I just had the excuse of I had someone else in town and wanted to go visit them. But it really comes – madness really comes down to it is whatever you want to, like – put your expectations to. If you want to have a chance to see players play that you haven't because you didn't get the YouTube feeds, okay, then mission accomplished. If you want to have a really resounding, successful, amazing experience, that's probably not the venue you're looking for.
I think it's more for the students than old guys like us because
right.
It's like the first big sports-related party on campus. With all due respect to the soccer and volleyball teams who are doing very well once again, but this, you know, those kind of a fall season at Marquette is kind of just a warm-up to the main event, which is the basketball season. So I think it's kind of like the first big tip-off to what everyone looks forward to every year, and that is Marquette basketball season. So, the scrimmage, really no surprises. Luke Fisher was held out just because I guess he had gotten dinged up in practice a little bit. Doesn't sound like serious. Just got knocked in the head a little bit, and no reason to throw him out there. A few people commented that if anyone still thought Henry Ellenson was a center, it's pretty clear that is not his best position.
Yeah, he struggled against Matt Helt significantly, who as a freshman big man, that's pretty substantial. If Helt is able to stop you, I don't know that you're going to go up against the bigs in the Big East and be successful in
him. Anyone who saw Henry Ellenson and what he did in Europe knows he can do a lot of things out there when you put him at the three and the four. So just really whatever perceived struggles he may have had playing the post in a – meaningless scrimmage doesn't bother me one tiny, tiny bit. I am still very excited for what he's going to do this year. And I guess we did get our first look. Again, this is brief, and it's just a scrimmage at Cheatham, who wasn't able to play in Europe. Again, I didn't hear anything astronomical one way or the other about Cheatham from the scrimmage, but I'm glad he's on the floor and we got our full look at the team.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and again, this is – you know, if you're trying to take away a bunch of conclusions from this event, I mean, the purpose of the event is really more so, for fans and to hype up and recruits and those sorts of things. It's not really for, I don't think, a real productive practice.
I would imagine
they don't practice this way in real life.
Yeah. Yeah, me personally, the one thing I look forward to with Madness every week is, or every year, is which recruits are on hand and if there's any commitments coming out. Most of the recruits that were on hand were local kids, and a lot of them 2017 kids or later. The only 2016 guy that I see Marquette is in on right now is a junior college kid who I guess has set up an official visit coming up. I guess in a few weeks, but other than that, I mean, basically if the roster stays like the way it is right now, there's really not going to be much space to add anyone else, maybe one or two more guys.
Yeah. Well, and we lost out on Amir Coffey, you know, between our last podcast and this one. Now all of a sudden I'm blanking on where Louisville, right?
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, there's so much to think about. We don't need to go into what Louisville may
maybe,
or may not
maybe
have
too early
to
in the season for those type of jokes.
Yeah, but yeah. So again, recruiting seemed kind of quiet, and justifiably so, just because the next year's team, as it is now, there's only one spot on the roster available as you're looking at the scholarship table. But overall, Marquette, and the only thing I was surprised about from Marquette Madness is that, man, when is Wally Ellison going to win a slam dunk contest?
What does he have to do?
I mean, come on. His brother won it this time, which is cool. But Wally, the world-class high jumper, he's got to win one before his Marquette career is done, doesn't he? You would think.
You would think so. Well, the thing is, maybe just the show dunks are not his thing, because again, by a couple of video snippets I saw, he had a great in-game putback dunk, reminiscent of the DJO Buzz Williams walk it out putback dunk of multiple years ago.
I actually really am excited to see what Wally Ellison does. I have no idea what kind of playing time he's going to get this season, but I think he's going to be a great, I hate to use the cliche, but it fits, energy guy off the bench, because I think that's exactly what he's going to be. And I think there'll be some games this year where Wally Ellington maybe doesn't win the game, but makes a drastic momentum shift in what he does coming off the bench.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you read into the fact that Luke Fisher sat out, so the blue team was the four starters from Italy minus Luke Fisher, and the fifth player on that team was Wally. Do you read into that Wally's the sixth man off the bench, or do you read that that's just what they needed to balance the teams between?
I think I read that in maybe just for roster balancing purposes
for myself. For the scrimmage.
Yeah, I mean, maybe because they had practiced one way, those guys together leading up to the scrimmage, and they maybe learned a few days before that Luke wasn't going to play, so they kept the teams the same.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, maybe those five guys were practicing, planning on scrimmaging that way, and then it's like, you know what, we're going to keep teams the same, Wally, you just go over here.
Well, plus the only two big men you have are Luke and Matt, so you're going to put those on opposite teams. And I don't know, who do you think is the sixth man off the bench?
I'm trying to think. All right, so the starters were, so it's going to be Carter, Dwayne Wilson, and it was Cohen was starting.
Cohen,
and then Henry. And then Luke. I would think Juwan Johnson's probably going to be the first guy off the bench myself.
You would think, right?
Yeah. I think just because what he does, it brings some versatility to the lineup, because whether he's coming in for Dwayne or whether he's coming in for Cohen and going with three guards, or if he's coming in for Tracy Carter and moving Dwayne over to the one. I just think that gives you a lot of options if he's your first guy off the bench, because he fits in a lot of different ways because of the way the roster is kind of constructed.
Yeah, no, that makes
but
sense.
But I think if you need a little more size, certainly Wally's one of the guys you want.
Right.
Because if anything else, he's shown he can rebound.
Right. Well, and the thing, and he had a pin the, you know, come from behind and pin the ball against the backboard block rebound in the scrimmage. So that's what he's going to do for you in the game in you know, the regular season or whatnot. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I do think Wally is going to get more minutes, not necessarily because he's going to have a skill set that is, you know, phenomenal compared to the other bench players. But I do think that Wojo is going to want to play an up-tempo offense, and is, you know, saw it in Italy. They're looking to break right off the rebound, and Wally's going to give them that. I mean, he's going to give them kind of that energy and that speed and that capability off the bench.
Yeah, and I think you definitely see how they want to run if you saw any of the games from Italy, because how many times did Henry Ellenson grab a rebound to start the break?
Oh, my God, that's going to be amazing, right?
And hopefully that is something we see a lot, and if so, I mean, there just aren't many teams that can match up with that, because who's going to pick him up in the open floor? You know, because, you know, if it's a guard, there's going to be somebody open who can take it the rest of the way, and if it's a big man, Henry's going to go all the way by himself. So, they're going to go up-tempo, and it seems like a lot of college basketball writers are reporting around the country that teams are going to be playing more zone, try to confuse teams, and give them, you know, with a shorter shot clock and not enough time to set up an offense. And so I think Marquette and probably several other teams are going to want to run and, you know, get to the basket before teams can set up that zone. So I think you may see a lot of that this year.
Yeah, well, that'll be interesting. I mean, when you think about it, it's 5 seconds. It's, you know, it's going from 35 to 30. Is it that much a big deal?
But I don't think so, but a lot of college basketball writers who are a lot smarter than I am seem to think it is a big deal.
Yeah, you know? I mean...
Who knows? Maybe they're wrong, but I, you know, like I said, these guys who write about it tend, like Mike DeCourcy and Andy Glockner and Jay Billis, they seem convinced that the shorter shot clock is going to be a disaster for some offenses because the way teams are going to zone up against it. But we'll see. I hope it's not. Just 35 seconds is a long time for an offense to hold the ball.
Yeah, so. It just strikes me that even if you take the full 10 seconds to clear the timeline, you've got 20 seconds in the front court to set up your offense. That feels like forever.
Yeah.
But what do I know?
Yeah, again, we'll see how it plays out. Speaking of how things play out, shall we go through the schedule?
I think we should. I think we've clearly got enough evidence that we can make very accurate predictions on how this season is going to go at this
and
point.
Totally just take it to the bank that this is what the record is going to be.
Right. If gambling were legal, you should totally use what we're about to say for that.
By the way, I was in Vegas recently, a Marquette 250-1 for the national title, for those interested in such things.
Okay, give us some perspective. What was Kentucky?
Wow, you're going to make me go like into my office and like look at that, or like I think Kentucky was something like 7-1.
Okay,
or something.
All right, so 250-1 feels like a value pick, you know.
Yeah. So yeah, I wish I had numbers on like what it is to go to the Final Four. I might have, you know, put a few down on that just for grins, but no. So anyway, we're going to go through the schedule essentially game by game and just kind of see where we think Marquette may be. When we get to March. First thing I want to do, Phil, is instead of going game by game on the gimmies, because they're painful, let's just, for the sake of expediting this, the 8 games that no one really wants to watch, IUPUI, Jackson State, Grambling State, Maine, San Jose State, Chicago State, Presbyterian, Stetson. Anything other than 8-0 in those games for you?
Absolutely not. And if it is anything other than 8-0, fire everyone.
I wouldn't go that far, but I would say give up on the season almost. Because, you know, if they go something like 7-1 or 6-2 in those games, they have so much to make up for because you're losing to teams that are RPI 300+. So those are games that absolutely positively should be wins. And with the strength of schedule in the non-conference being as low as it is probably going to be, you really just can't afford horrible losses. We've talked about that in previous podcasts. The schedule is what it's going to be, so it's not like we can change it. But bottom line is those 8 layups, you got to win them all. All right, so we move past that. Let's talk to the games that maybe aren't layups. One that you would hope would be a layup, or maybe not a layup, but at least a game they should win, is that Belmont at home. I've got that one as a win.
I've got it as a win, too, but you got to be really careful. The one that I really thought long and hard about making this a loss. If we didn't have the Italian games, I would have absolutely made it a loss, but with as much inexperience as we have going into that game, and Belmont was like a 110 RPI from last year, so they're not bad.
An experienced team too.
Right, exactly. They've got a lot of players coming back. So I'm going to put it as a win, but I will I'll be disappointed, but I wouldn't be surprised or shocked if we were to lose that first game.
Yeah, bring the Rolaids for that one, because it might be a stressful game, to be honest. But I do think Marquette will win that first game. I think there'll be a lot of energy in the Bradley Center for that game too, because it'll be the first official game.
Well, and everyone, you know, all the regular people that aren't nerds like us that watch things on the internet will, or listen to podcasts like this will be in the house for that and be really excited to see what the team is.
Yeah, so I think there'll be a lot of energy. I think that will hopefully make a difference, and hopefully that'll be the first win of the season. Next game that is not a gimme would be the Gavitt Games matchup against Iowa. That's going to be a home game. Because it's a home game, Phil, I do have that as a win as well.
This was another one that I went really, really close to 50-50, but I ended up putting it as a win as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so hopefully that would be a really nice start to get a couple wins under the belt against, you know, respectable opponents. And then comes the really first marquee matchup of the season for Marquette as they head to the Legends Classic in New York, where they're going to play LSU in the first one, and then either Arizona State or NC State in the second one. How do you see that one going, Phil?
The LSU game, you know, it's going to be Simmons versus Ellenson, so it's going to be the freshman phenom or the diaper dandies, if you will.
For those who don't know, Ben Simmons is the number one recruit in the country in the 2015 class, plays for LSU, Australian kid.
Yes, and LSU has a lot of youth in it. It's going to kind of be a mirror matchup to us, but I do think I don't know. This is where our youth and inexperience shows, and I think we lose this one.
I do have the LSU game as a loss myself, just because it'll be the first really challenging game away from home, and I think it'll be the Ben Simmons show. I hope Ellenson has a great game himself, but I do have that one as a loss against a team that really could be a sleeper to win the SEC, to be honest, because Kentucky's going to be good. Kentucky's not going to be unbeatable. But I do have them bouncing back in the second game against whoever it is, whether it's Arizona State or NC State. I don't know who it'll be, but whoever it is, I'm just going to pencil in, not knowing who the opponent is. I'm just going to say it's going to be a win, and they escape New York 1-1.
I just think it's a disastrous trip for us with the youth. I actually have that as a loss, especially if we play NC State. I mean, if we play ASU, I'm much more comfortable with it, but NC State, I think, is a better team than ASU and has some experience, and I think we could struggle there.
Yeah, it could be a struggle. It would be interesting if it's Duke and Arizona State, because then you'd have the coaching matchup of two former Duke point guards.
Yeah, that's true.
Because Bobby Hurley, of course, is now at Arizona State. NC State was a team that made a nice run in the tournament last year, so I think that would be a tough matchup, too. The trip to New York will be tough, and I think it's really going to challenge this team. So even if they do go up there and have two losses, we'll see how they bounce back from that. Because then, again, because of the non-conference schedules we've talked before, you need quality wins if you want to have anything to show to the selection committee. So if that makes those games important, it would be great to come out of there with one nice win.
Yep, but, I agree.
Yeah, we'll see. And then the excuse me, I'm losing my voice right now. But the last non-conference game before the new year against a significant opponent.
Of any consequence.
Yeah, is at the Red Rodents in Madison. And while when we get to the game and are actually making this prediction the week of the game, I will almost certainly call it a win, just because that's what I always do. But for the sake of being realistic in our game-by-game predictions, I do have this game as a loss for Marquette.
I don't know how we can declare it a win right now. I mean, the Badgers have, obviously they lost Kaminsky and a few of their other players, but they're still bringing back some talent. And it's going to be in the coal hole, which, I don't know how you take an inexperienced team, no matter how talented they are, go into there with the officials and the fans against you. I think that's a loss as well.
Yeah. I do have it as a loss too. So, including the Stetson game, which is, right in the middle of conference play. So that means I have them at 11-2, and you have them at
10-3.
10-3 non-conference.
Yep.
If I'm doing my math correctly,
that
math
is correct.
Very hard. So, I think, again, it seems like we're kind of splitting hairs here, but I think two losses is the most Marquette could afford, really, realistically speaking, because unless you're going to dominate the Big East, you got to have something on that resume, as I said before, if you're going to go to the selection committee and say, look what we did in the non-conference.
Well, whether the math works out totally correct or not, but like for every loss beyond two in the non-conference, you almost have to pick up two extra wins in the conference. Like if you think the conference season is going to be 10-8, if you lose more than two in non-conference, you almost have to go like 12-6. In conference play to kind of balance that out, given the weakness of the schedule. So it's going to be critical. I mean, you really want, either they need to win either at Wisconsin or they really got to win that LSU game. Those are the critical games to really focus on.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, those are going to be kind of the swing games because you need a big win somewhere. So I'm kind of with you on that one. Is you got to find. I mean, you got to find some half decent wins in the non-conference schedule, and you can't lose all those big games and beat all the cupcakes and expect the committee to have any sympathy for you, because they're just not. So, but let's talk about Big East play as we kind of go game by game through the Big East and figure out what Marquette might be doing. in conference play because the schedule is out. And I will say before we go game by game, Phil, looking at the Big East schedule, the one thing that jumps out at me is if, and I'm putting, you know, putting a big if, big caps in the if there, but if Marquette is going to contend for the Big East, they're really going to have to prove it in the last three games of the conference schedule. I mean, if they came, the last three games are Nova at home, which is National Marquette Day, by the way.
Which Georgetown always works out well for us.
Yeah. Georgetown at home and then at Butler. So those are going to be three extremely tough games to close out the season. So either, well, like, I guess either way, whether Marquette is contending for the Big East or just fighting to be on the bubble, they're going to have opportunities to prove themselves in the last three games if they can take care of business in the first 15 games.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and again, I just to kind of tip my hat as to what I'm thinking for conference season, I think we're certainly going to be playing much better at the end of the season, regardless of the schedule. I mean, it's going to be a tough schedule, but I think this team will be firing all cylinders at the end of conference season. At the beginning of conference season, I think it'll be a struggle because, again, they'll be going up competition that they haven't necessarily consistently gotten in the non-conference season.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so let's go game by game and see what we think. Marquette will open Big East play on December the 30th. It'll be a home game. I guess they're doing it on the 30th to probably avoid head-to-head TV ratings with the, of course, the college football national semifinals are going to be on Saturday, on the 31st this year because college football does that.
Well, yeah, because they want over. So college football is avoiding the NFL, and then college basketball in the form of the Big East is avoiding college football. So
Big East season opens on December 30th. It's going to be home against Seton Hall. Just because it's at home, Phil, I do have the first game as a win myself.
I have this as a win as well. I think they'll start off on a strong note there, but we'll see.
Yeah. Next two games are on the road, at Georgetown and at Providence. And to me, those games are 3 days apart. They're this January 2nd and January 5th. And back-to-back road games that early in the non-conference, I think that's a lot of trouble for me. I actually have back-to-back losses.
I have back-to-back losses as well. I think they kind of get punched in the mouth in Georgetown, and because they're young, they don't have the bounce-back ability and lose at Providence as well. And Providence will be a decent team, I believe.
Yeah, Providence is always competitive. And, of course, let's not forget Providence has Chris Dunn back this year, who will, you know, he's going to be one of the best players in all of college basketball, probable lottery pick this season. And moving on, great point. Great discussion on Chris Dunn there. For that reason, I think Providence is going to be real tough. And I think that's so Marquette starting 1-2. Then they come home on January 9th to take on St. John's. I got a bounce back win against the Johnnies.
I actually have this as a loss. I think they go on an extended losing streak here to start the season.
So you got them losing at Villanova in the next one as well?
I also have them losing there as well.
Whew. So you've got them at a 1-4 start in Big East play, which would really get the social media grumbling. I have them winning at St. John's and then losing at Villanova. So I also don't have the best start to Big East play because I have them at 2-3 at this point. But yeah, it is kind of a tough start with three tough road games in the first five games. Yeah, but then after that, you would hope Marquette could at least get a little momentum going because they have home games against Xavier and DePaul. Xavier will be tough because Xavier always is tough, but I have back-to-back wins to kind of get things going here against Xavier and DePaul.
I have wins in both of these games as well. I think it just you know, and I think in the extended losing streak, I think unlike previous, you know, last year, I think Marquette will be competitive, but I think they're gonna, you know, they're not gonna necessarily know how to close out games and really win. And I think after that rough couple of weeks, they really start to kind of put the pieces together and figure it out.
Hopefully they get a little momentum going here. I have them at two wins, but then they go to New York, taking on St. John's again. I have just because trap games on the road. I picked this one as a loss.
I went the other direction, and I have this as a win. I think they, you know, they're starting to put the pieces together and figure out what's going on.
All right, so then after the snoozer against Stetson on the 27th, they get back into conference play against Butler on the 30th. Win or loss on that one, Phil?
I have a loss for Butler at home, actually.
Okay, I've tried to get a little optimistic, and just because it's a home game, I have him beating Butler. So, but again, Butler's one of the teams that people are looking at to possibly contend for the Big East title this year. Villanova's always going to be the favorite, but I think a lot of people have Butler is one of those teams grouped in with Georgetown that could challenge Nova at the top of the conference. But I'm going to say a nice Marquette home win for Butler. But then I have them tripping up on the road twice myself the next two games, going to Seton Hall and then at Xavier. I have both of those as losses.
I have them both as wins, actually. I think this is where they start to pull it together.
See, back-to-back road wins against those two teams, that would really start getting people excited if they could get a couple road wins and they can shake some of those early stumbles. But again, I just think going on the road is tough, so I got two losses there. Then they come home to Providence and the Fighting Duns, which will be a very challenging game. I have it, again, I'm sticking with the home theme. I think they're going to be better at home this year, so I have them beating Providence at home.
I have them beating Providence as well. I think they figure out how to cover Dunn. And then in the next game against the Fighting McDermotts, I have them, I have them beating Creighton at home as well.
Yeah, I also have them beating Creighton. So a little momentum, hopefully, going in these last few games because they're going to need it. Then two road games that I hope will be wins and confidence-building wins at DePaul, at the House of Horrors, and then at Creighton. So play Creighton twice, two out of three games there, so get really familiar with the Blue Jays. But I don't know how strong the Jays are going to be this year, but hopefully I have them winning both of those road games, DePaul and Creighton.
I have them winning both as well, and just as a note, this is part of a six-game winning streak that I'm projecting.
Wow. So if that's true, if you're winning, you know, regardless of opponent, if you've won six straight conference games, people start to give you a little respect and might be right on the good side of the bubble. But then this is those three games we talked about before we started breaking down game by game. Last three games, Nova at home, Georgetown at home, at Butler. It's very challenging. How do you have the first one going, Nova on National Marquette Day?
I actually have them breaking the streak against Nova. At some point, the talent will catch up with, or the experience will catch up with the talent. I think this Marquette team will be very talented by the end of the season. I actually have them beating Nova.
Ooh, a little more optimistic than I have them. I have that as a loss just because Nova is always so freaking good. So I have them losing to Nova, but I do have them bouncing back in the next game and beating Georgetown.
I have them beating Georgetown as well.
And then the season finale, which will be at Butler on March 5th, win or loss at Butler.
I have them as a win to cap out a 9-game winning streak.
Well, that sounds just insane.
I just think that this team will be firing on all cylinders at the end of the season. I still think they're going to be a solid bubble team for the tournament and just as likely not to be in as out. But I think the schedule sets up that they take some early knocks and kind of can get good in the middle and really build on that momentum and go deep in the schedule.
Okay, so I have them losing the last game at Butler, so that puts my conference record for them at 10-8. Yours is the 9-game winning streak. What is that? 12?
Yes.
So well, you got 12-6.
Let me count losses here: 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, maybe even 13-5.
That sounds like a lot of wins to me.
It does sound like a lot of wins.
13-5 seems very optimistic. I guess I'm a little more tempered with mine. So I have them at 10-8, which would have them at 21-10, if that's right. 31 regular season games. That's what I have them at heading into the Big East tournament. Now, 21-10 would probably be bubble, very bubble-ish.
Yeah, that would be super bubble.
If they're 21-10 with the wins that I have them with, because according to my little schedule here, their best quote unquote wins would be Arizona State, Iowa, Belmont, a home win against Georgetown, and a home win against Butler, and that would be about it. So that would probably be bad side of the bubble when they would need something in the Big East. Now, conversely, your predictions have them with a few more quality wins, with at least one over Villanova, one over Georgetown, one at Butler. See, that I think would put them on the good side of the bubble and just need to solidify it in the Big East tournament.
Yeah, I agree. Well, it's you know what, and we should temper these projections with last year. I think we projected a, you know, 19 or 20 wins and didn't even come close. So
yeah, didn't even sniff it. So
yeah, so we may be a little bit over enthusiastic for Marquette's level of success, but you know, we'll see how the season. We're going to have to revisit this after the non-conference.
Yeah, I think like before I actually went game by game, I kind of had Marquette as middle of the road Big East around 10-ish wins. It's you know 12, 13. If you get in like 13 wins, that's you're in the hunt for the title, really. Because you know I don't know if Villanova is the favorite. I don't know if I see them dominating the conference. Like I did last year. Like last year, I didn't see Villanova losing more than like three games in the conference, and Villanova was pretty darn good. But while Villanova will be good, I think Providence is going to be right there just because I think Chris Dunn's going to have a huge year. And Georgetown's always going to be in there, I think. I think Georgetown has a really nice roster. So,
yeah, well, and it's going to be interesting because I think the Big East this year, you know, Villanova is clearly the top, and then the next couple of teams, it's probably some combination of Butler, Georgetown, and maybe Xavier. Mm-hmm. But I mean, depending on how Marquette develops, other than Villanova, do you see any reason why, you know, the middle to top tier of the Big East is absolutely 100% going to be better than Marquette?
No. I mean, that's the thing. I really don't know anywhere. I really can't get a solid grasp on exactly where Marquette fits in right now out of the 10 teams. I mean, they could finish second or they could finish eighth. Who knows? It all depends on I don't know how this team gels. And of course, injuries are going to be a factor for both their team and other teams. You know, if you're being healthy is going to be a factor, I think, of course, as it always is. And, you know, if Ellenson produces and turns into the NBA prospect like many think he is and the way he kind of looked in Italy, yeah, it could be a special year. Who knows? Maybe they finish in the top third of the Big East, which would be great.
Yeah, absolutely. So it'll be, you know, this is going to be one of those we need to take the games for what they are. You know, I'm just hoping that the team can rally out, especially to end the season, even if they don't, you know, even if they don't end up in postseason play or they end up in the NIT or something like that. I really hope they close out the season strong because,
right.
You know, there's a general, you know, everyone's kind of the big time fans are excited for Ellenson and all the pieces we have. But the casual fans are kind of, I think there's a general malaise that if we have another middle to low season could kind of take some luster off Marquette long term.
Yeah, I would like to see some momentum building going into next year because whether Ellenson comes back for a second year or not, you know, Wojo does have the roster set up to be pretty good next year because you know, you're going to have a lot of young talent coming back, whether that includes Ellenson or not. And so I think Marquette could really take a nice step forward next year because all these young guys who are gaining experience this year will be kind of seasoned veterans. But, you know, it'd be great if Ellenson's back if the entire roster's back for another year, then I think expectations would be crazy high going into next
year. Well, absolutely. I don't think you would find plus 250 in Vegas for national championship if the whole team comes back next year.
Yeah, I think so it'd be nice to build a little momentum one way or the other heading into the season. We're going to wrap up with just a few general questions about Marquette as we sit here entering the season as practice begins post-Madness. Phil, kind of what are your general expectations for this team this season?
Again, I think it's going to be a rocky non-conference. I think the expectations for the team is just kind of getting experience, there's a lot of pieces we got to figure out how they all work together. I mean, you got Sakar, you got Cheatham, you've got some pieces that you don't really know necessarily what you have. You know, Tracy Carter, the engine, you know, is he the full-time play 25 to 30 minutes a game? There's a lot of pieces to figure out. So I think it's going to be an up and down non-conference, early conference season. And then late in the season, I think that the team really kind of comes together and knows what it is and knows what its identity is.
My expectation is just in some shape or form to return to the postseason. At least get to the NIT. I would certainly love to see this team back in the tournament. And, you know, if they can get to 20 wins, 20-plus wins, they're going to be in the hunt. Who knows how the rest of the country is going to look when we get to March. But that's kind of my minimum thing is, you know, I want this to be a postseason team of some type. And I think when you have a guy who in Ellison who is looked at as a potential lottery pick this year or next year, you gotta strike while the iron's hot, because who knows when you're going to get a player like that again in your program. So I want them to make the most of it and at least get back to the postseason of some shape or form. And again, the way you said, talking about building momentum late in the season, if they can do that, I think they will I think they'll certainly get that opportunity.
Well, yeah. And I, you know, one of the things that'll be nice this year, and it, you know, it was great. I don't even remember what the hashtag was for the Super 8 or whatever it was last year.
8 is enough.
Yeah.
No, it was 8 strong.
Yeah. 8 strong. What's nice about this year is, again, we don't know all the pieces yet, but we presumably have enough depth that we can live through, you know, a couple of walking boot incidents and, you know.
One of these days, the Marquette mascot, the Golden Eagle, he is actually going to have walking boots.
Yes, he's going to have them ready to dish out. But, we should have enough depth that we can, you know, because – sustain a long campaign, you know, if we have a few minor injuries or things like that. So that's the other expectation, is that, you know, I don't think we're going to go 11 deep, but I certainly think we're going to see we're going to have players, 9-10 players with, I would say, significant minutes.
Yeah, you know, in Italy, just about everybody got to play. But, you know, as we said in our podcast breaking down Italy, when it comes to Big East play, you're not going to be rotating 11 guys. You're just not. So, I mean, there are going to be some guys who are going to be buried on the bench, and I just hope they're, you know, content in their role and realize that, look, you can't rotate 11 guys. So there are going to be some guys whose moment in the sun is going to have to wait till next year or their junior seasons 2 years from now. But, you know, hopefully everyone finds a role, and, you know, Wojo gets a rotation of 8-9 guys that he's comfortable with, and those are the guys he's going to rely on to win games.
Yep. Well, like as an example, Matt Helt, as a freshman big man, he's going to see spot minutes at most in the conference season. You're just not going to take a freshman big man and run him out there much other than just giving Luke Fisher a breather, or if you know, or if there's significant foul trouble or something like that. So I think we'll have it shortened up to about 9, but getting the pieces some run, that is the other nice thing about the craptacular non-conference season, is you can definitely get some players out there and see what you've got and see what they can do.
Right, yeah, and hopefully we don't have another Omaha game like we did last year.
Oh, man, that would be New Jersey, you know, Institute of Technology.
Yeah, but, you know, again, some of these teams like Maine and San Jose State and Stetson, hopefully those are games where, you know, some of those young guys can get a little seasoning, and if there is something that needs to be worked out rotation-wise or get some guys some shots, those are going to be the games you're going to hope to do that. Another question I want to kind of go through, Phil, is what generally are you most excited for this season?
Well, the cheating answer is going to be Henry Ellenson.
Right.
But I'm
that's
actually,
my answer too. I mean, that's plain and simple. I want to see this guy play in Big East play. For
right.
Sure.
But what I'm actually most excited for, I mean, other than Henry Ellenson, because I just want to see him live up to the hype, I'm actually really excited for Sandy Cohen. He's really seemed to like have blossomed in the off season. He's put on weight. He just seems much more confident. I think he's going to be a real, I don't know that a surprise player, but I think he's really going to turn some heads with his what he does on the court this year as compared to last year.
Yeah, and I'm just going to stick with the simple answer, just because one of us has to say it. The answer is Henry Ellenson. When you get a five-star recruit, a McDonald's All-American, a guy who's going to start as a true freshman, a guy with his size and ability to handle the ball and shoot the ball and rebound and start the break on himself on his own, you just have to be optimistic that he's going to make a difference and help this team turn a corner in some shape or form. So I'm just excited to see exactly how much he helps this team turn a corner, how big a difference he makes, and what kind of big moments he'll have. You know, if there are going to be some games, you know, who knows? It might only be like two games all year, but there are going to be some games where he just blows up Twitter on his own and people say, oh my gosh, this kid from Marquette, did you see what's going on? So I'm looking forward to those type of games and the holy crap moments, whatever they may be. And hopefully there will be like 20 of them.
But hope, you know, well, we're going to need at least nine of them to have my prediction come true.
Yeah, maybe there will be nine of them, all of in February and March. That would be terrific. But I'm just excited to see what kind of moments he has as a player. And, you know, with all due respect to all the other players on the team, just nobody has the hype that kid does. And so I just want to see what kind of hype he lives up to.
Well, and I think it'll be very interesting because he does have, and this is not intended to sound like hyperbole or overblown, but I mean, given his skill set, he does have the opportunity, at least within college basketball, to kind of change the way we look at the game a little bit. I mean, you know, having a big man driving up court, initiating the break and things like that, like just the way you have to adjust to what his skill set is, I don't think we've necessarily seen much in college basketball. So that in and of itself will be very exciting. Assuming he can do those things on a regular basis, how do you stop it?
Right. Yeah. And I'm interested to see the people who, like national writers who don't necessarily follow Marquette as much as we do, what they start saying about him and how much they are tweeting about Marquette basketball and, you know, how much more attention he brings. Because, you know, let's be honest, when you're a 13-win team, people aren't going to talk about you nationally, and I can't blame them for it. But if they can, you know, if you can get closer to that 20-win mark and you have a marquee player on the team, people are going to talk about you.
They're absolutely. As long, if he can get on the one on FS1 on a regular basis, that's a good thing.
Just trying to pay respect to FS1 because yeah, we're on their team now.
Maybe we can get our six listeners to tune into FS1 and really make sure that station continues to thrive.
God bless you, FS1. We're pulling for you. I guess last thing, Phil, on the flip side of excited is things you're nervous about. Is there anything you're really concerned about for this upcoming season?
The one thing I'm really I guess I shouldn't say really concerned, but my overarching concern is we still don't know how good a coach Wojo is. You know, last year's team had a lot of deficits in terms of personnel and injuries and things like that, and they were competitive, so it makes you think, well, maybe Wojo can coach and put him in a good position. We know he's a good ambassador for the program. We know he can recruit, but can he coach up a roster full of talent and use the pieces efficiently and effectively to put a team together that's going to be really competitive and really successful? I don't think there's any doubt this roster has talent. It's going to be up to the coach to make those pieces work, and we don't have any evidence yet that he has that capability.
Yeah. Okay, I haven't thought about that as an answer, but we don't have any evidence that he can't coach either. So, I mean, yeah, he's a young coach, and this is his first job, and it's only his second year, as he's really kind of – this is his team now, the way he's built the roster. And I am curious to see – you know, when he gets in those really tight games, when he needs to draw up something and make the right substitutions to win a game at the end. There were so many of those games last year that just didn't go Marquette's way, and by the end of the year, it just kind of spiraled out of control, and they just couldn't win. They just couldn't buy a win late in the season. But there were so many games last year where, for whatever reason, not saying they were all on Wojo, but there were just so many games where they just couldn't get that last minute bucket, or they just couldn't get that last minute shot. So hopefully some of those games go the other way. I'm pretty optimistic because from some of the little things, you know, I think Wojo showed a good ability to make some adjustments, and I certainly think this year he'll have a greater grasp of what his roster is. After working with him in the summer, playing in Italy, and as we, you know, get into Big East play, I think he'll have a pretty good handle of what his team is and who he can expect to do what. So I guess the thing I'm concerned most about, I'm going to keep my answer kind of simple again, is just the youth. You know, when you're depending on a lot of freshmen and sophomores to win you games, I mean, there are going to be mistakes. There just are. You know, as much as I would love for all these kids to come in and be perfect and just be awesome and just totally turn the program around the way Dominic James, Wesley Matthews, and Jarrell McNeil did. Not that they were necessarily perfect as freshmen, but they were just pretty darn awesome. But, I mean, there are going to be freshman mistakes, and some of these young guys, as they get used to the speed of the game, there are going to be probably some situations where they have the deer in headlights thing going on. So, I am concerned that some of those – and if those result in a few close losses, especially – in Big East play, you know, that could be the difference between making the tournament and not. So that's my biggest concern, is how long will the freshman mistakes linger, and when will they be ironed out, or, you know, not maybe not necessarily eliminated, but to the point where they're not costing us games?
Right, absolutely. That is, well, and that's what I kept harping on. I agree. That is, especially early in the season, are they going to be able to live through some of those moments? Because, I mean, your most experienced player is going to be Dwayne Wilson, and you know, he's only really playing his third year, you know, starting his third year.
Yeah, Dwayne, I mean, this is his second full year.
Right. Yeah. No, you're right. Second year. Third right. year in the program, but second year overall.
Yeah, I think it'd be a great year for Dwayne to turn the corner. So who knows? Maybe he may take a leap forward to being, you know, a national name. You know, people, a name that a lot of people know. If he can continue the trend we saw from him as a freshman, because he really had an outstanding freshman year. So I guess that's a pretty much general look at the program post Madness. Not bad considering we didn't have a game to play.
Yeah. Yeah, we haven't lost any games yet, so we're good.
Yeah. I guess one thing I do want to wrap up with, just because we haven't had a podcast since we did this, or since I did this, for those of you who watched ESPN's College Game Day, first college football game of the season, for those of you who don't know, you probably noticed a Marquette football sign. That was yours truly. Back there, and I just wanted to all I wanted to really say about it was just thanks to everyone who tweeted and retweeted and just kind of spread the word it was going on, because if it wasn't for so many people thinking it was funny, I wouldn't have done it, and I wouldn't have felt like it was worth my time. But the reaction I got on social media to it was, you know, just made me say, like, as I was driving home that day, saying that was totally worth it. You know, a lot of, because that was really the point of why I did it. I just wanted to make some people laugh. I wanted people to get a charge out of it and just think it was funny and just have Marquette kind of in the headlines on the first day of college football. So all I wanted to say was thanks to everyone who watched College Game Day that day and then tweeted your pictures, your thoughts, or your hashtag College Game Day signs and your pictures of it. So I appreciated that you appreciated it. It definitely made it worth my while.
Yeah, well, and just as a note, we tried to get an exclusive interview with Joe McCann for the podcast, but his agent was like, he's not doing it for less than $10,000, and, you know, we're pretty cheap around here, so we couldn't get that exclusive.
Yeah, so that's why we didn't do it, like, immediately, and I just waited until the next one to kind of sneak it in. But it was a fun day. Just, you know, there was actually a guy in front of me who had a Dayton Flyers flag. I don't know if anybody could actually see him.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, so he was kind of doing the same thing I was, but his mistake was he had it was a flag, but he didn't have a pole, so he was just kind of holding it with his hands, so he couldn't get the flag up high enough, because, you know, to get my sign up high enough, I had to hold the bottom of the sign, and, you know, so the top of the sign was out of my reach, so it could be seen behind Herb Street. So, you know, he didn't really wasn't able to get his Dayton Flyers flag up high enough. But although Herb Street during the commercial break, of course, Herb Street being an Ohio guy, he did recognize the Dayton Flyers flag, and he like laughed and like made a basketball sign. I at first thought he was making that gesture at me, but I realized later, oh, there's a Dayton Flyers guy in front of me that he was making that gesture to. But yeah, it was funny. It was a fun day. So anyway, thanks to everyone, and especially Anonymous Siegel, who wrote that hilarious social media recap article. I enjoyed it, and like a lot of my friends across the country, family, you know, they saw me on there and they saw that recap and they thought that was hilarious. So
yeah.
Anyway, thanks for making the day enjoyable.
The only disappointment was I was disappointed there wasn't a Marquette alum in range of the following week. I thought there was a real chance it could have gone viral where every week someone had a Marquette football sign at game day, which would have been simply amazing.
Yeah, that is – funny thing about that, two things. One, another college friend of mine, his wife is a Clemson alum, and they were at the Clemson Notre Dame game a few weeks ago. And he said – he texted me the night before. He said, we might go out and recreate your Marquette sign. I'm like, oh, that would be awesome. Good luck. And it turned – you know, of course, it was like that hurricane was coming, and – it was just soaking wet, and they woke up late. They're like, you know, we decided not to do that. That's the one thing I will say about my College Game Day appearance. That was by far the easiest situation to get on TV, because it wasn't on a college campus. It was in Sundance Square, which is in downtown Fort Worth, and so there were hardly any college kids there. And really, it was just – I'd say the median age was somewhere in the 30s, whereas opposed to if you go to a college campus, you know, it's a bunch of – 20-something-year-olds who just rolled out of bed or maybe had been up all night. And so doing that on a college campus, like had that been on TCU's campus, I probably would not have been up for it. But, you know, with College Game Day going on the air at 8 o'clock, I was able to get there at like 6:30 and get that primetime real estate right behind Herb Street.
Well, so, and your television experience paid off. You knew how to position yourself behind a camera.
I did know where the cameras were. I will say that maybe helped a little bit. It was funny. There was a kid, I think his name was Brett, you know, just because, you know, when you walk in to where the game day, you know, kind of, I guess, for lack of the stable is where everyone stands, like they do have like a kind of security guard there who like looks at your sign and makes sure it's nothing offensive and decides whether they're going to let you in or not. And so, you know, the guy looked at my sign, said, turn it around. So make sure there's nothing offensive on the back. Okay, go on in. And so I was holding up the Marquette sign. And then there's one production person on the, you know, the game day staff, you know, like one of the person, you know, people who are like setting up cameras or setting up lights or microphones, like before they went on the air, he like started walking over right towards me. I'm like, all right, is this guy going to say something that, you know, it's a Marquette thing and a Big East thing and ask me to like not have it. But what he said was, hey, that's really cool. I'm a Marquette alum. I'd never seen a Marquette sign at game day. I'm like, oh, cool. Nice to meet you. So it was funny that there was actually a Marquette alum on the production staff for game day. And I don't know if he had anything to do with them putting the camera on me. Because if you watch the show, at the very end, when they like go around to show their best signs of the day, they had a real close-up shot of the Marquette sign.
Oh, that's great.
I don't know if he had anything to do with that camera getting tight on that shot. So like everyone could see the Marquette sign, but if he did, I appreciate it. And it was fun to see a fellow Marquette alum out there.
It takes a village to make something go viral. Clearly
it absolutely does. So anyway, that was a fun day. And I just want to say thanks to everyone who tweeted at me. I know it's super old news now. It was like 6 weeks ago.
In internet terms, it's really old. Like, you know, like Saratoga right. old,
but this is our first podcast since then. So I just want to say thanks to everybody for tweeting at me and retweeting it. So that was a fun time. Well, I guess that's going to do it for this podcast, and I appreciate everybody joining us today. Again, you can always check us out online on the social media. You probably know us by now because you were tweeting at me during College Game Day, but I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is M-triple-O-F 23. You can always tweet at Crack Sidewalks. We're also on Facebook. There's a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page, or you can go to cracksidewalks.com, which is where we post the podcasts, and we're also on iTunes, so you can carry us with you anywhere we go. Phil, I'm looking forward to the next one, because then it'll be game time.
Yeah, we'll actually have actual basketball to actually talk about.
And we will look forward to then. Again, thanks for joining us, everyone. Enjoy college football. Until then, college basketball is very, very close. Until then, seashells and balloons.